It's been 40 years since Chris Orcutt and I first met in elementary school. I can still remember the group of kids we were in when we were introduced to each other, having both recently moved to the apartment complex that we shared for a few years. We've continued to be in touch, more than in touch, and grow old together. Now, in the present day, even as our lives have gone in different directions in terms of how we use computers and interact with electronics, I had the opportunity to give Chris one of my old machines, and it brought to me again the wonder and the glory of console gaming. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Peter Healy, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Chris was a TRS-80 and Tandy kid. I was a PC, Apple, and Atari kid. But we found a way to make it work. As we headed into college, Chris kind of fell out with computers. They no longer became the obsessive, day-to-day hobby that they continued to be with me. Chris was dealing with his own issues, an undiagnosed bipolar disorder, an attempt to become a criminal investigator that turned into a writing career, and meanwhile, there wasn't one bit of the electronic experience that I wasn't willing to throw days and weeks and all of my health into just to try out the latest toys or spelunk into a piece of hardware that had fallen into my lap from years and decades past. There's a lot of ups and downs in our relationship, a lot of different ways we went and some unconnected years, but Chris and I are pretty close these days, and one of the roles that I'll sometimes take with him is to be his Sherpa in both events of the day and interesting technologies he might want to play around with. To be clear, it's not a case that Chris couldn't become an expert that far surpasses me in these subjects. It's that he's made a very specific lifestyle choice, one I truly admire, where, in focusing on his writing career, he has put everything around that process. Creating solid drafts, planning deep and sophisticated mysteries, spending months researching all of the topics that his characters bring up with a cavalier air before moving on into the next scene, doing all of the real, hard, foundation work to making something not just passable, not just good, but great. His Dakota Stevens mysteries, his short story collections, his one-off books about a whole range of subjects, they are good. But the price he pays for that is that he doesn't have the time to constantly hit refresh on a world that always wants to offer you the newest, juiciest, weirdest information and drag you into it. He's got things to do. Waking up around 5 o'clock in the morning, getting to his pencil and paper or his typewriter, and grinding out the verbiage, which he can then form and refine and craft into something you would really, really enjoy reading. And a side effect of that is that Chris finds the entire honky-tonk of the present day very distracting and very unpleasant to look at. If you spend a lot of time focused on one process, one project, and then look up and see this constantly spinning Las Vegas wheel of distraction, you might be amused, but it's not going to be fascinating. So my role sometimes has been to give him a report from the world outside, where we'll have a nice meal, hang out together, and he'll say, "What's the deal with this?" And I'll give him the best consolidation I can from the hundreds of hours I've spent looking at it. He might ask for more, he might not, but he can get back to what matters to him much quicker. And this is important. It's not a one-way gift. This isn't Chris using me like some sort of refined human RSS feed trying to get some simple information and making somebody else suffer for what's out there. What Chris helps me do is get perspective on what's going on. There's a lot of stuff out there that gives a very organic feeling of being relevant or important or worth your time that falls apart on the page when you try to describe it in a few sentences. My own tendencies to obsess, to focus, to make my life easier, but also give me the illusion of having more than enough capacity to handle all of this, weighs down on me, makes me think that this is the way the world works and it can't be any other way. And talking it out with Chris really helps. Friendships don't have to be 100% mutually beneficial, and they certainly don't have to be thought of as a set of tokens where the amount you do for somebody is then owed back to them in some other form of currency. That's not healthy. And certainly, having a very, very small circle of friends where every day you need to talk to them because they represent your entire contact with other humans, that's not going to work out in the long term either. You get to 40 years because you don't spend all your time trying to make each other into something you're not. You enjoy what you shared, you draw upon it, and then you have new things come into your life and pleasantly argue, and maybe sometimes not so pleasantly argue, about what it all means. Because you know, deep within that friendship, there's a bedrock that you both can depend on. Even if it needs a break, even if it needs a few moments, even if heated words come across the telephone or in person, that's how you know you've got a real keeper. One of the newest chapters in the life that Chris and I have shared is the game consoles. As somebody who's going up through the different generations, I'll buy a new machine and then keep the old one around in a box just in case I need to reference something or because a part can be reused or any of a number of reasons. And then eventually, it doesn't have any meaning to me at all, and it can be a gift. And a few years back, Chris had heard about a World War II fighter, and he wanted to try it out. And as it turned out, it was compatible with one of my old, discarded consoles. So I arranged for him to have it. I put it all into a crate, drove over to his house, and dropped it off. He loved it. He played it for about a week and a half, and then he contacted me and said, "Hey, can you come pick this up?" And I asked him if it had been broken or if it was something I could fix, and he said, "No, I just don't need this distraction. I need to get back to work." So began a tradition for a while where Chris would let me know that he'd love to have one of the consoles. I'd bring it over. He would play it for a while and then let me know it needed to leave. We were recently talking, and he was enjoying a game. And I asked him if he had played the sequel, which I knew all about, and he said, "No, it doesn't work on my machine." And I said, "Oh, it'll probably work on the new one." And he said, "Well, I don't want to buy the new one." And I said, "No, I have an extra new one lying around. Do you want it?" He immediately bought a copy of the new version of the game, and I had the console over to his house within a day and a half. In this moment, when he is just starting to play a brand new generation of hardware with its increased resolution, its massive power upgrades, and all the other features it includes, I'm reminded again of his interesting relationship with these games. He doesn't play piles and piles of them. And thanks to the modern landscape where you can play games for free or a simple monthly fee, he has been moving from one to another, trying them out, having reactions, getting into it brand new. Because along with the fact that he's enjoying these games comes the gift that he has never paid attention to game press. He doesn't read sites. He doesn't look up reviews. He doesn't blast through endless amounts of hype and presentations being given to him in small driplets over the years. He's either playing the game or he's not playing the game. And the moment the title screen comes up, it is a brand new introduction to him. Not enough of what we have in the world right now gets that sort of treatment. We have way too much in the way of previews and playthroughs and walkthroughs and developer discussions that take away some of the power of what we see. And if you're lucky enough, like Chris, to live a lifestyle that lets you avoid all that, then it's actually for me a gift to watch it all through his perspective. He doesn't care that this development house had this controversy or that this represents the fourth in a series for this set of designers. He boots it up, he looks at it, he decides if he likes it. And when we talk now, a portion of our discussions are about these experiences, brand new to him, explaining to me how he feels about this or that, or maybe even asking me to go diving out into that ocean of information because he's trying to figure out a hint or wants to know if there's a way to tweak this issue or fix this problem. And I will find it for him if it exists. So, here we stand, 40 years of friendship, 8-bit to 64-bit, what feels like endless power and possibility compared to what we had when we started out together. And you know, of all the journeys I've taken, and all the projects I've done, and all the things I've had the opportunity to say, my journey with Chris Orcutt, the monk and the Sherpa, has been the most fantastic and rewarding of all. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Corey Thomas, Emilio Oliveira, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, Daniel Boyd, James Bekoyanu, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.